You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here along with our MLB.com Nationals reporter Jamal Collier as we inch closer and closer to opening day for the Nationals, and there's still some stuff to get ironed out as far as this team goes. One of those things, the closer obviously, the bullpen in general. We'll talk a little bit about the starters as well, and Max Scherzer finally making his spring debut, so plenty to cover. Let's start with the fact that this team's getting some guys back, Jamal, from the World Baseball Classic. Tanner Roark pitched really well for Team USA. He helped get them to the final, and they obviously won that final over Puerto Rico to win their first World Baseball Classic title. Getting those guys back is big. Did you get a chance to talk to any of them about the experience?
Yeah, we did. We talked to actually Daniel Murphy and Tanner Roark about it. You know, it's weird. I mean, both those guys have playoff experience. Murphy, you know, going to the World Series with the Mets the year before, he talked that him and Eric Hosmer, as a matter of fact, too, who was on Team USA, kind of compared like those atmospheres in Kauffman Stadium and at Citi Field, and said that, I mean, those games were as loud, if not louder, than anything they experienced during that. And of course, Roark pitched during that game, that wild game in Miami, which was, you know, going to go down as one of the best games in the history of that tournament against the Dominican Republic. And he, you know, he kind of raved about just how insane that atmosphere was and how that's going to help him going forward. You know, being able to pitch in that kind of environment and experiencing that kind of environment, you know, it kind of just helps you realize how to stay calm and how to deal with that kind of pressure. And it's just kind of hard to believe that you'll ever see probably another environment like that anywhere in baseball, where you have drums and you have horns and you have, you know, people kind of going crazy for an entire nine innings. So both guys really enjoyed the experience and really, you know, seemed to be happy. You know, they necessarily didn't get the playing time that the Nats or they may have expected. I think they both were pleased with the way the tournament went and would like to do it again.
I was going to say that Daniel Murphy ended up not playing that much. Ian Kinsler got the majority of the time at second base, which was a surprise to me. But I guess early in the tournament, Kinsler basically got off to a better start than Murphy, and Leland just decided to go with the hot bats, and that ended up being Kinsler, who, in his defense, he played well throughout the whole tournament. But Murphy's still obviously a big part of being there and being part of that team. Max Scherzer was supposed to be part of that Team USA. He was excited about it. Obviously, the injury to the knuckle kept him from playing for Team USA, but he's finally back pitching in spring training games. Obviously, he's behind schedule, but how does he feel about where he's at right now, Jamal?
Yeah, the thing is, he's really not that far behind, and that's kind of maybe one of the incredible things, is that besides kind of just the way the days are going to line up, you know, that first outing he had earlier this week, you know, he threw 73 pitches, so that's about where everybody else on the Nats pitching staff is at this point that have made their starts. So, you know, throw 70-something this time. Next time, he'll probably go up to 90-something and, you know, be able to kind of back off and be ready for opening day. So, you know, he feels really good about it. That finger injury, he said he's ready to put it behind him. It's kind of no longer an issue at all. So at this point now, he's just kind of building up stamina and arm strength. His pitches are still working effectively, and everything, you know, looks exactly like Max normally looks at this point in the spring. So as far as he goes, I don't think there's going to be any lingering effects or any worries about, you know, re-injuring himself or that being a reoccurring thing. So yes, once he builds his arm strength back up to where he used to, we're going to probably just have regular old Max.
The rotation coming together nicely, I guess, and Gio Gonzalez part of that, pitching well this spring. Have you almost been surprised by how good Gio has looked thus far in March?
Probably just by how efficient he's been. I mean, I think the biggest thing with Gio when he does struggle is sometimes he can get to high pitch counts early on, he can start walking guys, and really when he gets into trouble, it's kind of been his biggest. You know, when he gets into trouble, things have kind of snowballed on him. He's not been able to necessarily get out of trouble. I think if he gets something like a 9-something OPS with runners on base last year and with runners in scoring position. And I think that's the biggest key is that, you know, he starts getting hit and then kind of continues to keep going and can't get his way out of it. I think he's done a good job of that this spring, is that even when he's allowed guys on, he's been able to roll a curveball and get a double play or not walk guys or not hit somebody to kind of, you know, make the damage kind of worse and get more men on base. So it's an encouraging sign so far. Whether he can carry it to the regular season or not is kind of still remains to be seen. But definitely you have to be encouraged with what you've seen from Gio's chest to bounce back from last season.
Eric Fetty is obviously one of the future starters in this Nationals organization, and he's been sent back to minor league camp from a long stretch that he had up with the big club, and what a great performance, I guess, to take with you back to the minors. Fetty getting the win in a 1-0 win Thursday over the Mets. He goes five innings, just two hits. He struck out three. And when you know a guy is eventually heading back to the minors like Fetty, to be able to put that together on his way out, he's got to be going down to wherever he's headed to start the year with a world of confidence.
Yeah, I mean, I think between him and between just the way the team feels about him too, definitely encouraged by that last performance. You know, Dusty called him one of the guys who's at the top of the list as far as when they're going to need a starter at some point during the season, because everybody kind of always needs a starter at some point. So, you know, for him to pitch that well and to perform like that, I think against the pretty much the A Mets lineup that they're going to run out their opening day was has to feel good for him, and it feels really good about the Nats to know that even though they necessarily don't have, you know, as much pitching depth as they had last season after trading away some guys and making the deals they'd made the offseason, I think they have to feel good about Fetty and about where their future is going to be. If he can put together performances like that and continue to improve over the course of the season.
All right, sliding over to the bullpen now, and Joe Nathan looked good on Thursday as well against the Mets. I know he has an opt-out clause in the deal. Joe Nathan, obviously 42 years old. He's kind of seen it all in Major League Baseball. Today is March 24th as we record this, Jamal. Any news on Nathan and or where he's leaning?
Yeah, as of this morning, he was here at Nats camp. That doesn't mean anything either way. Dusty said he hasn't had a chance to talk to him. Mike Rizzo is supposed to meet with his agent at some point today. So we're kind of on standby here. This, of course, you know, it's not a drop-dead date today where he has to necessarily opt out or be added to the team, but it's something that I think after this point forward, he can kind of, you know, exercise that clause. So I think that, you know, we should have a clearer picture. If not at some point later today or at some point, you know, on Saturday or the weekend here, exactly where Nathan stands. But, you know, I think they like what they see from him, and they think that he's done a good job and has something left. I think the question now just kind of comes down to numbers and exactly can they find a spot and find room to keep him around, and would it be a role that he's necessarily, you know, wanting to sign up for. So as of right now, still not a whole lot of clarity as far as Joe Nathan's situation, but he is still here with the Nats as of recording this podcast here, right about the start of the game here at 1:00.
He's a guy who's obviously been a closer a lot in his career. He won't be a closer with the Nationals, but let's talk about who could be, because that continues to be one of the key battles of this spring training. And
yeah,
Blake Treinen looked real good on Thursday, closing things out. He's yet to allow a run this spring. Is there a favorite at this point for that closer job?
You know, it's weird. I mean, here we are, you know, about a month and a half into the spring, and we've kind of went through every option, and obviously it's been the kind of the big storyline of the offseason here, and there's really not anybody who's necessarily, not necessarily it hasn't emerged, because at times Blake has looked really good, at times Sean Kelly has looked really good, and then kind of a, I want to say a new guy into the mix, but a guy who has really started to emerge into that mix as well as Coda Glover. And I think this is a guy they liked in a lot. He came up last year, kind of skyrocketed through their system. They started the year in single-A Potomac and ended the year, you know, on the major league roster and had a chance to be on the postseason roster if he didn't kind of have a hip injury that may have impeded him a little bit. But he looked lights out this spring. They've started throwing him a lot in the ninth innings this spring. And it's a weird thing, because spring training ninth innings, you obviously mean nothing and aren't used against the best competition. But just based on the way they've used pitchers in the past, based on the way they used Jonathan Papelbon last season, a lot of times they use their closers in the ninth inning to get them ready. And it's, you know, not a coincidence that he had five trade appearances that all went in ninth inning as well. So it's weird. You know, here we are still about, you know, less than 2 weeks away, and I don't think there still is a very clear answer. Dusty's insisted that they still have to meet about this, and they're still going to talk about this. And I think there probably is still some discussions to be had, but I think, you know, Coda Glover is as much of an option as and is being considered just as much as anybody else on this team. So it'll be interesting to see exactly which way they go. There's still a three-horse race right now, and I think that I wouldn't be surprised to go either of the three directions.
I think the good news is that these guys have pitched well this spring. It's not like you're making a decision between guys that have struggled. They've all pitched really well, and whoever gets that spot looks like they're heading in the right direction as far as being successful as the closer. One more thing I wanted to touch on with you, Jamal. Tim Raines was in camp, I guess, or at the game the other day, talking a little bit. He went on the TV broadcast. I know he spoke to reporters as well. Obviously, there's the Expos history there And he spoke a little bit about Trey Turner, right, and what he sees from one speedster to another.
Yeah, you know, there's a guy in Trey Turner who he kind of identified, you know, shortly after he was drafted and got a chance to watch him, you know, as a kind of roving minor league instructor with the Blue Jays. You know, he's definitely been impressed. He said he was kind of joking, mad at the Blue Jays that they didn't go out and get this guy because he reminds him a lot of himself, probably with a little bit more power, Rain said, that Turner has instead of him. But, you know, very similar skill sets, and is a huge compliment, as a matter of fact, for a guy like Trey Turner to be compared to the Hall of Famer and Tim Raines. Tim was here yesterday at the ballpark at Palm Beaches, getting a chance to see. So doesn't get a whole lot of time to see the Nats or watch games necessarily, you know, these days outside of his duties with the Blue Jays. But he was very impressed with Trey Turner, and say looking forward to following his career the rest of the next couple of years.
Of course, Tim Raines heading into Cooperstown this summer as a member of the 2017 class of the Hall of Fame. All right, great stuff, Jamal. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Nationals edition. For Jamal Collier, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next week. Hey, everyone. Mets spring training rolls along. Tim McMaster here, joined by MLB.com Mets reporter Anthony DiComo. And Anthony, lots of pitching stuff to cover, and that's kind of been the storyline throughout the spring, I guess. But let's start in the bullpen, where I just want your take. Addison Reed obviously is going to be the closer, it looks like, to start the season because of the suspension. So the ERA is over 10 right now. What is wrong with Addison Reed, and should we be concerned?
Yeah, I mean, what's wrong with Addison Reed is he's just frankly not hitting his spots. He doesn't have the command that made him so good last year and in years past. I'm really not concerned about it. And the reason why is, you know, when you look at these spring performances from pitchers across baseball, you know, in general, you worry less about veterans who tend to know what they're doing, tend to be working on specific things, and really are just getting their work in to be ready for opening day. But, you know, in contrast to someone like a Matt Harvey, for example, who has had his success in the past based on upper 90s velocity, and that's what's made him good, Addison Reed, while he still throws hard, has been much more of a command guy throughout his career, you know, topping out around 93 and really just hitting his spots with his pitches. So that's the type of thing that comes last in spring training. Velocity tends to come first. So, you know, with a week and a half to go now, I'm really not that worried. I have full confidence that it will come for Addison Reed. And like you said, he's almost certainly going to be the closer for this Mets team opening day. He's got plenty of experience doing that in the past, and I would be surprised if physically he's not ready to go by the time that rolls around.
One guy who has put up tremendous numbers this spring has been Rafael Montero, obviously a guy that was once kind of a top, highly heralded prospect as far as starting pitching goes. That never really worked out. But this spring, going into Monday's action, 20 strikeouts and 13 and a third innings. I mean, that's what you want to see from this guy from the bullpen, right, is you take that starting stuff and you hope it kind of takes a notch up in the bullpen. He's been that good this spring. Is he going to make the team?
Well, he's been dynamite, no doubt about it. And you know, the thing about Rafael Montero is he's always had good stuff, and he got himself into trouble with nibbling too much around the plate, walking way too many guys, and as a result the strikeout numbers were down. But he's pitched himself, and going into the spring, I should preface this by saying, going into the spring, this is kind of a real, true make-or-break year for Rafael Montero. We say that about a lot. We say that a lot about a lot of guys. But if Rafael Montero had another bad year in 2017, that's probably it for him. I would struggle to see him getting another chance. So for him to get off to the start that he's gotten off to in spring training, he's kind of put himself right back on the map. Now, will he make the team? Probably not. But he has put himself in consideration, too. I think the reason why I say no is there's a good chance that Seth Lugo, who has also pitched great this spring and who pitched great last year for the Mets, will wind up making the team in the bullpen instead of the rotation, with Robert Gsellman locking down that number five spot. So where does that leave Montero? Well, not in the big league bullpen, because they don't really have a need for two right-handed guys who are stretched out, who can pitch you multiple innings. I think realistically, Rafael Montero could wind up in the rotation at AAA Las Vegas, where all of a sudden he's back in that situation we've seen him in the past, where when an injury happens, he could very well be the first guy called up. You know, if you assume Zach Wheeler will start either in extended spring training or less likely in the minor leagues, you know, that's kind of your depth guy is Rafael Montero. So, again, he's just put himself back in a position where he's relevant again, and that didn't necessarily have to be the case heading into spring training.
You mentioned Gesellman, and you've been consistent in your thoughts that he could end up being the guy or will likely end up being the guy that gets that fifth starter job. He was very good on Saturday, 5 innings pitched, 1 earned run. We mentioned Lugo, and he's obviously was good in the World Baseball Classic as well. Zach Wheeler on Thursday, the velocity was there, which is obviously a great sign. He's behind the other guys as far as how much he's pitched this spring, but how encouraging was it for the Mets to see him throwing as hard as he was?
Oh, it was unbelievably encouraging. And you know, everyone always tries to dampen talk about velocity and how much that matters, but it does matter. And believe me, the Mets took notice when they saw Zach Wheeler throwing 97 miles per hour. And kind of like we were just talking about with Montero, it almost takes a guy who probably had not that great of a chance to make the team, to make the rotation, and it makes everyone just turn over their shoulder for a second and say, wait a minute, you know, this guy looks pretty good. I still don't ultimately think Zach Wheeler will make the team. He's on a very strict innings limit. He's not going to go above 120, 125 this year. And so the Mets have to figure out when they're going to ration those innings. You start him out in the opening day rotation, and then, well, he's probably done at some point in August if you do that. Or you start him out in the bullpen and limit his innings that way and then move him into the rotation. The Mets don't love that idea because he's had such trouble coming back from Tommy John surgery that do you want to upend this guy's entire routine? Probably not. So the third option would be to start him in extended spring training, and I think that's the most likely option, where he can continue to work, continue to throw bullpen sessions, continue to stretch himself out so that maybe at some point in May or June, you bump him up to the big league rotation and he's good to go for the rest of the year. I think that's ultimately what we're looking at. I think, well, Zach Wheeler has looked great velocity-wise. His off-speed stuff looks good. You know, he's still not pitching deep into games. He's still a little inefficient. The command is not quite there. The control is not quite there. So with those rough edges, I think that's what makes the most sense. And, you know, frankly, coming into spring training, like you said, in my eyes, Robert Gesellman was the leader in the of the pack based on what he had done last year, based on his stuff, based on just that whole total package. And he's done absolutely nothing to lose that status in my eyes going forward here.
You mentioned the Mets not really being interested in putting Wheeler in the bullpen to start the season. How about, I don't know if this has ever come up or anything, but the Baltimore Orioles a year ago went with an interesting plan with Dylan Bundy, another guy who had obviously gone through so many injuries and everything. He pitched out of the bullpen, but he pitched basically every fifth day out of the bullpen early in the year, and they were able to keep his innings limit way down, and then he transitioned to the rotation later in the year when they needed him. But he was basically pitching out of the bullpen on a starter's schedule and throwing 2 innings or so every fifth day. Has anything like that ever come up as kind of an alternative weird plan for a guy like Wheeler?
Well, the one thing I'll say about that is, you know, you ask about kind of funkier type ideas like that, and the answer, and rightfully so, is, look, this is a team that is built to win now. This is a team that's gunning for the playoffs. It would be a disappointment if they don't make the playoffs. Frankly, it would be a disappointment around here if the Mets do not play deep into October. So they're not looking to develop pitchers. They're not looking to you know, have guys rehab themselves essentially in the major leagues. And, you know, a team like that is just isn't willing to commit 2 innings every 5 days, regardless of score, regardless of situation, to a guy who has not pitched in the big leagues in 2 years. So it would be very, very tough for the Mets to do that and to kind of specialize their plans and make an exception for Zach Wheeler. And you know, ultimately, while you'd like to see those innings that he's going to be pitching and would be pitching in extended spring training happen in the big leagues, because he's a very, very good pitcher and he can certainly help the team, you know, I think it's probably just a better situation for everyone involved that if and when he becomes part of this rotation, he's there for good. He's pitching every 5 days, and you don't have to worry about anything like capping his innings or pitching him out of the bullpen or anything that might disrupt this guy going forward.
Certainly. And Bundy's situation was a little different also in that he didn't have options, so they couldn't send him down to the minor leagues. And they had an extremely thin pitching staff, so they kind of needed the arm pitching somewhere, which are two things that, are not an issue in the Wheeler situation. Wilmer Flores had a huge game the other day, six RBIs. He hit a grand slam. He crushed a grand slam, I should say. When you look at Flores, and obviously he's a guy who will be able to play kind of all over the diamond in the infield if needed, how many games does he play for the Mets in 2017? I know he dominated lefties in 2016. You hear him talking. There was quotes in your story about him thinking that he could dominate righties as well. But how many games is he going to be in for the Mets?
Yeah, well, there were two different types of quotes in that story, and I actually found it really interesting. It was after that game, after Wilmer Flores hit a grand slam, he said some things about, you know, I can be more than this. I can be more than just a platoon player. I can hit right-handed pitching. I'm comfortable hitting right-handed pitching. And later that afternoon, Terry Collins kind of said, well, you know what, Wilmer Flores needs to accept his role and be comfortable with his role because it's probably not changing. And what that role is he's a starter when the Mets face a left-handed pitcher, and when they face a right-handed pitcher, which happens obviously much more often, he's a bench bat, and he's the number one option off the bench against a tough lefty. And frankly, based on last year's numbers, he's one of the best hitters in the game against left-handed pitching. But against right-handed pitching, he's not. He hasn't proven it over a long sample that he can be. And the Mets have such potency in their lineup against right-handed pitching with Neil Walker, with Asdrubal Cabrera, with Lucas Duda at first base, Jose Reyes, and you know, ultimately, if David Wright comes back, him as well. So there's really just no place you can justify putting Wilmer Flores in the lineup against right-handed pitching. It's a bit of a catch-22 in that if he does feel he has this ability somewhere in there, he's not going to get the chance to prove it. But again, this is a contending team. Wilmer Flores has a very important role on this team and not an insignificant one. He'll log plenty of at-bats, but the thought that it's going to be more than last year, that he'll get more run than he did in 2016, it's just not going to happen.
I guess the positive you take is that you want a guy to think that he's that good and you want a guy to have that confidence. So at least you have that in Flores. He's not a guy that's timid or lacking the confidence going into the season. The World Baseball Classic, some teams have lost, or not lost, but some teams have had superstar players playing in it. The Mets haven't had that issue this year. They've had a lot of random guys. Fernando Salas played a little bit. Brandon Nimmo got hurt in the World Baseball Classic. Ty Kelly is now back from playing for Team Israel. He's another guy who's trying to make this Mets roster, and he just raved about his experience playing for Team Israel.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, those are the guys where it's a really cool experience. You know, guys for Team Israel in particular, guys for Team Italy, guys who can play for these teams based on their heritage and not necessarily where they were born, it gives them an opportunity to kind of strut their stuff on an international stage, whereas, you know, frankly, they just don't have the skill sets to play for Team USA. You know, Ty Kelly was a very interesting case, and I'll say the same for Brandon Nimmo, for Gavin Cecchini, for Seth Lugo, who pitched great for Puerto Rico. You know, these are guys competing for jobs, and what means more? Doing this on an international stage against some of the best players in baseball has to offer. And Seth Lugo, for example, pitched against Team Venezuela and Team USA, which might very well have the two best lineups in the entire tournament. What's more important, seeing them do that or seeing them in spring training in Grapefruit League games facing guys with number 97 on their jersey? You know, obviously, in my mind at least, it's the World Baseball Classic. And I think, you know, for a guy like Ty Kelly, it was a chance to show off, essentially. And he didn't perform well over there. He didn't perform all that well. But just to do it on a big stage, I think, was a great experience for him. He has an uphill climb to make this roster, but it is possible. He can play everywhere, including the outfield, which is something the Mets value, particularly if Brandon Nimmo, who injured himself, actually, in the World Baseball Classic, if that hamstring injury lingers, then maybe there's a spot on this team for Ty Kelly. But just the experience of doing that, I know he wouldn't trade it, and I don't think any of these guys would trade it for the world.
Great stuff, Anthony. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Mets edition. For Anthony DiComo, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Marlins spring training rolls along in Jupiter, Florida. I'm Tim McMaster, joined by Joe Frisaro, our MLB.com Marlins reporter, as always here on the podcast. And Joe, you have an article this week about five sleeper candidates for the Marlins roster. I want to get into that a little bit. There was some fun this week with D. Gordon and Justin Bour as well. But let's start with Martin Prado and kind of, you know, news of the day or of the week, I guess, as he continues to try to come back from that hamstring injury. And it sounds like the Marlins are taking the cautious approach. No rush. We need this guy for the whole season, and hamstrings always tend to be tricky.
Yeah, I mean, they were dealing with that with A.J. Ellis, about the catcher who still isn't back in, you know, in games, and he got hurt at the end of February. So you just never know. You know, Martin got he pulled up at the World Baseball Classic playing for Venezuela, and he came back. The MRI was very encouraging. A grade one strain, which is the best news you could get for a hamstring, but the best news for a hamstring still could be a month. So, you know, I think best case scenario would be he's going to start the year in the DL. There's no doubt about that. They opened on the road with six, starting off at Washington, then New York. It's going to be cold there anyway, so, you know, playing in that weather wasn't, you know, giving a chance that. Best case scenario would be the first homestand. If that's not the case, I still think they're optimistic by the mid to late April. So obviously that creates some openings, but I can tell you this much, the Marlins are not actively out there, you know, seeking a regular third baseman because they feel Derek Dietrich can handle that, you know, mostly in pricing the pitching. They've got Miguel Rojas to protect themselves as well. Now, if for whatever reason, by the end of camp, and Don Mattingly has said that, they still have a much better indication, you know, a week from now as they're kind of getting approaching breaking camp, if they'll be, you know, more towards the middle of April compared to, you know, May or perhaps even, you know, worse.
Derek Dietrich did such a great job filling in last year for D. Gordon at second base when he went on his suspension. How good a third baseman is Dietrich to fill in for Prado?
Well, it's not his natural position. You know, more of a second base was more of what he, you know, he broke in and started playing like in 13 when he joined the Marlins. But, you know, he was solid. I mean, in today's game against the Astros, he had a lot of balls hit to him early. You know, not the defender that Martin is, but, you know, I think, you know, all they ask is, you know, make the plays you should make. You know, that's what they're asking. And I would also think if they got leads or whatever, they could, you know, maybe defensive substitute late in the game, you know, with Miguel Rojas there. But, you know, they're already playing on the short bench, so they may have to even go with Derek, you know, in the ninth inning, you know, if, you know, Martin's not there, depending on the positions that they, how they fill out that roster. So he's going to have to play. I know that, you know, he's getting a crash course. You know, Derek just can't, for the most part, before Martin's injury, taking grounders at second, taking some at first, playing third, going out to left field. Now I think they're kind of giving him a little extra work and kind of trying to run him out there day after day at third base, even letting him face left-handed pitching before left-handed at report.
Seems like the Marlins have gotten a look at least of the future at the hot corner this spring as well, Joe. And you have a story about Brian Anderson and how impressive he's been. He's the club's number three prospect. Not on the 40-man roster right now, so no chance he's going to make the team out of spring training or anything like that. But maybe is he closer to the majors than maybe the Marlins thought he was before seeing him this spring?
So people, you know, if you're following the podcast and the website, you know, Brian Anderson really opened eyes in the Arizona Fall League, you know, and it's just kind of carried over. You know, as you know, he is not on the 40-man roster. There's no rush to get him here. He's a little bit like Dylan Peters, the pitcher, in that boat in the fact that, hey, look, he's showing promise. And when you look at prospects that could help the Marlins, perhaps later in 17 or going into 18, Brian Anderson's a guy that's, you know, kind of jumping at you right now. Hitting the ball very well, you know, getting a lot of opportunity. I imagine he'll be sent down at some point. Well, I, you know, pretty safe that Don Mattingly basically said as much. You know, they're not looking to get him, you know, in the service time going, and anything that would stunt his development, you know, as he progresses. You know, he's made big, big strides from, you know, right after they drafted him. Like I said, the Fall League was really good, you know, and, you know, probably I would think go to AA and get his work there, much like Dylan Peters. But he is a guy, if you're a Marlins fan, keep on your radar and see, you know, how he tracks. Plus, you know, he could be the third baseman of the future. You know, Prado signed for 3 years, so, you know, we'll see what happens there. But Brian Anderson's a guy that I wouldn't be surprised if he hits the big leagues in 17, but it would be later in the year.
The Marlins bullpen has the potential to be very good for 2017. The one thing that needs to be sorted out, I guess, still is who's going to be those multiple inning guys down there in the bullpen. And there are candidates. You have a story, Joe, about Nick Whitgren and Brian Ellington and Hunter Cervenko. All three of those guys can't make this bullpen, right? It's a situation where maybe two of them?
Possibly, maybe even one.
Okay.
Because it's, you know, Jeff Rock is the guy that could have filled that long relief role, and Jose Urania, I got him as the other one. But, you know, Rock's been open on the DL as well. You know, he's been hurt all camp. So you're kind of looking at, what do? Do you go with a Justin Nicolino, who's been a starter as a multi-inning guy? Mattingly's made it clear they're not looking for specialists. And Hunter Cervenka is a left-hander, more of your traditional go get him for one inning or go get that lefty guy, and he fits well. But they're going to need more than just a go get, Daniel Murphy or Bryce Harper. They're going to need him to go multiple innings, purely by how this bullpen is shaping up. I mean, the design is to carry eight, and at least five of those are going to have to be long inning guys, because if starters falter for whatever reason, they're going to need guys to pick up the slack. Even if Cervenka is out for pitching, let's say Whitman, and I'm not saying he is or isn't, he's got to, show that. The same thing with Nick Whitman. He's got to show he can go multiple. And those who have been following the box scores or the games in spring training, they're going to kind of find some interesting little, signs that they get in those box scores. By when you see guys who may profile down their line in their future as one-inning guys, maybe, really good setup and potential closer types, are going to be asked to go multiple innings. It's almost the path that A.J. Ramos took, when he kind of went multiple inning until he kind of settled into a setup and now the closer. So those guys are all competing, and, key will be their ability to pitch effectively in more than one inning, and can they also have to bounce back and, not be, shut down for 7 days. As they recover, they're going to have to kind of show the ability to bounce back and go when necessary.
Nicolino and Cervenko are also in your top five sleeper candidates for the Marlins roster. The other guys, and there are a couple infielders, Matt Jengel and Tyler Moore. Is their chance of making this roster based solely on the fact that Martin Prado isn't going to be ready to go opening day?
Oh, that's a possibility. I mean, he has an out clause, Tyler Moore. He's an on-roster invitee. He's shown well for himself. He's played first base. He can play a little left field. A guy who I really think has a really strong chance of making this club, though, is switching catcher Tomas Tellez. Last year we referred to him as Tellez. I think he's told the PR department that the pronunciation is Tellez, so that's how we're going to refer to him. Tellez has played a little bit of first base in New Orleans last year. More of a hitting catcher, still needs to work on the whole aspect of receiving. But think about it. You got A.J. Ellis, who has yet to catch in a five-footly game since, I think, game two. He was in that game, I believe. So he'll get some games here, but, they anticipate A.J. being ready. But if you carry that third catcher, you kind of protect Ellis in case something happens there. And you also, can free up J.T. Realmuto, the starting catcher, to go play a little bit of first base, and you're still covered behind the plate. So don't be surprised. You kind of alluded to, my sleepers, and I wouldn't be shocked if he has the advantage to be that, that fourth position player. Now it would be something that Prado's going on the DL. So I'm looking at a bench of Rojas, Ichiro, A.J. Ellis, and very good chance Tomas Tellez.
All right, I wanted to wrap things up with a fun story from spring training, and that was Justin Bour and D. Gordon deciding to trade uniforms. And I don't mean they wore each other's numbers, Joe. And I know you were there taking some pictures. They actually wore each other's uniforms, and if you don't know those guys by sight, D. Gordon, 5'11", 170 pounds. Justin Bour, 6'3", 265. They don't exactly fit, and this seemed like it was a more painful exercise for Bour than for Gordon. It's one thing to be, running around in a uniform that's a little too big, but a little trickier on a uniform that's too small.
Yeah, it's you never know what you expect when you wake up and come to a spring training site, and guys are getting a little crazy as well, the people you get in the camp. And those guys have a very tight friendship, and as tight as the boss uniform was on his boss uniform was on board the body today. And I think, you know, the story at least they told us publicly was D wanted to stretch his pants out. So I somehow it evolved to, well, let me wear them out during, you know, warm ups and stretch. And so they're like, why not go all the way? You know, so Gore wasn't in the lineup today, which is good, and Gordon, but they, it was quite a sight. You know, they're taking BP. One looked like, you know, a little kid wearing, sweatshirt. And the other one, you know, looked like, you know, somebody that didn't tie him a little coat type of scenario. And so, a little levity. They kind of had fun with it. And D did not play in the game, let's make that clear, with, you know, Justin Boyd's uniform on. But at least during warm-ups, they gave us kind of occupied a couple of hours.
We've certainly reached the point in spring training where it has become a grind for all these players, and a little levity definitely helps you get through to opening day. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Marlins edition. For Joe Fusaro, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone. Atlanta Braves spring training rolling along in the shadow of Disney World down there in Florida. Tim McMaster here along with our MLB.com Braves reporter Mark Bowman. And, Mark, the gang's all back together. We'll get into some different stuff. Dansby Swanson healthy again. We'll look at the pitching staff, who's looking good, who isn't. But let's start with the fact that Ender Inciarte is back. Swanson's back healthy. Inciarte obviously was with the World Baseball Classic. But you look at this team as a whole, and the Braves actually get to send out what will be their team onto the field for a spring training game. It's been a long time since they've been able to do that.
Yeah, first time since March 3rd. You know, everyone's Inciarte and Freeman went to the WBC after playing on the March 4th, and that was the same day Swanson tweaked his side, was out for a couple weeks, and then a week later, Adonis Garcia had a sore hammy for a little over a week. So, yeah, you know, it may not seem like a lot of time to put a whole lineup together, but you walk around that clubhouse, you know, and they're like, hey, look, how many bats do you need? You know, we hear it time and time again, the spring training's for pitchers. You know, the length of spring training is for pitchers. So, I think it's nice for them to put their lineup together, get a feel for what it looks like. That's the one thing about this camp that stands out is, while Sean Rodriguez, they're going to feel that loss throughout the year, you know, with his versatility. I think, you know, if you go back to, you know, February 9th or 10th was the day before we learned that Rodriguez would be out for the rest of the year. Obviously, the lineup looks a little bit different, but since they made that trade for Brandon Phillips, we knew exactly what the lineup was going to look like. We knew exactly what the rotation was going to look like. That hasn't changed. The bench, you know, while it still certainly looks like a weak spot, the components of that bench haven't changed. And the only change in the bullpen is Eric O'Flaherty basically slides into where you might have placed either Blaine Boyer or Chaz Rowe for now. It's not to say Boyer or Rowe may not get in there if they don't carry three lefties by choosing not to put Paco Rodriguez on the roster. But for the most part, this team, as long as they stay healthy for the next few days, they're going to head north, basically looking exactly as you would have projected on February 14th or the first day of spring training.
Ozzie Albies is down in the minor league camp. He was up, obviously, for a little bit once he was fully healthy and everything. But he's tweaked the knee now, so a knee bruise, and he goes back down to minor league camp. But while healthy and while with the big league club, what did Ozzie show?
You know what? It's amazing to think he's 20 years old. The one thing that stands out, he talked to staff. I mean, there's no getting around it. He's a small guy. And then there's always going to be concerns about his durability, but when he's out there on the field performing, it's a lot of fun to watch. It was wise for them to move him from shortstop to second base. You know, he's very capable at that position. His arm plays better there. He's a guy who's that place. I don't know exactly where he's going to fit in the lineup, especially if he gets up to Atlanta and you got Inciarte in the one spot and Swanson in the two spot. Then, you know, what does Albies become? But he's a guy that's certainly going to provide some, if you got him in that sixth, seventh spot, not down there towards the bottom of the order, He's a guy that can create some havoc down there with his legs. I guess the one thing that stands out is here he is. He's 20 years old. He's already got two big league camps under his belt. This year's camp was certainly different than last year's, where he was able to, you know, truly play on a frequent basis. This year he had to prove that he is, you know, distanced himself from that elbow fracture, and he did. And I think that's what stood out. Fun part about it, I said, hey, you know, you weren't concerned when you first started to let it, you know, start swinging, and, you know, little guy like this and company just said, no, I just let it eat. So, you know, it's a lot of fun to be around him, and I don't think it'll be long before we see him in Atlanta.
Absolutely. You mentioned the roster being what we expected it heading into the season. One thing that was a bit of a question mark heading into the spring was who would be that number five starter with all the young arms and less availability for positions because of R.A. Dickey and Bartolo Colon being around and Jaime Garcia as well. Mike Foltynewicz is that guy, and it seems like when you look at how the spring played out, this ended up being kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah, and you know what? Hey, look, if I was in the Braves position, I would have manufactured or created the competition to, you know, you don't want to just give somebody a spot, but come on, I mean, how could you have given it to anybody other than Foltynewicz? I mean, if you, based on what he did last year, sometimes you got to create competition just to, you know, make sure guys know nothing is guaranteed. But Foltynewicz has certainly provided an indication he is able to build on what he did last year, where those occasions where you saw the potential. You know, everyone could see that. You even saw that the year before. It was just from a mental perspective. What would he be able to handle adversity? And, you know, I'm not going to, you know, try to say this kind of adversity, that the situation that you experience in spring training is equivalent to what you would during the regular season. But for now, hey, look, well, when there are guys on base, he's kept himself more composed. He hasn't allowed the previous pitch. You know, occasionally you'll still see him flip his glove or shake his head at an umpire. He's going to have to clean that up a little bit, that kind of stuff. That'll come with a little bit more maturity. But at the same time, he's not allowing that previous pitch to affect that next pitch or the next at bat, allowing things to snowball. And I think that's the biggest stride that I've seen him make. And I think, you know, like I said, I realize that the situation's going to be a little bit more tense. There will be more pressure once the regular season begins. But he has provided some indication that he is capable of making that next step. And, you know, from a stuff perspective, there's no doubt that he is the one guy in that rotation that has legitimate frontline stuff.
Mentioned R.A. Dickey and Bartolo Colon, and we always say the numbers in spring training don't necessarily matter. Of course, they do the later you get into spring, I think. And those guys have had up and down springs, some of the times really struggling, but they're also veterans who have been through it all. So maybe you even more so throw out the numbers. That said, is there any concern about Dickey and Colon heading into the year when obviously you want these guys to have great at least first half so you can flip them, if nothing else, later in the season?
Exactly. You know, that's the one thing. There's nothing in this rotation that said, you know, you obviously look at Jaime Garcia, you look at his health history, you think if he gets off to a good start, you know, they'd be wise to flip him. You know, with Dickey and Colon, you want them to pitch effectively not only for, you know, the immediate success of the team, but also to maybe be in a position to use them as currency when the trade deadline comes. So that is one thing that you do want to see them pitch it better. I'm not a guy that's going to concern myself with spring training results, especially, you know, with Colon. You know, he's just toying with everything, you know, under the sun all the time. The one thing with Dickey is, you know, it's the one start against the Marlins, he did throw more fastballs than he usually does just because he didn't want to, you know, show the knuckleball to a couple guys. There was another start where he said he toyed with the curveball. But at the same time, look, everybody knows what Dickey's going to throw. You just hope that pitch is dancing, you know, once the regular season begins. He has a feel for that knuckleball. One thing that I'd say one positive with Dickey, it does look like Kurt Suzuki has found some comfort catching him. Look, I understand why, you know, the fans are going to get, you know, kind of concerned about, you know, ERAs. But at the same time, let's not forget, these guys weren't acquired to become Cy Young Award winners. They're you know, the Braves are looking for them to eat innings and be middle rotation type guys. And, you know, I think they're both certainly capable of doing that as long as they work to get – 200 innings or somewhere close to that this year, that they've basically done their job. And, you know, you go back to where we were talking about the trade, you say, okay, well, how are they going to get 200 innings if they are traded? You know, the fact is you just want them to be on that kind of pace. You want them to be eating innings so that it does not have an adverse effect on your bullpen. And it still looks like the Braves are going to go with an 8-man pen. I think a big reason for that is, you know, there's some guys that still be out of options, guys that they don't want to get to a point to where some of these guys get taxed to where they would be subjecting themselves to losing them via, you know, DFA or waiver wire claim, you know, just because, you know, they had to pitch them 3 days in a row. They don't have that luxury that they had in the past to basically have a subway system back and forth between AAA and the big leagues.
With the 8-man bullpen, Mark, obviously that limits your options as far as the bench for this team heading into the season. That said, you have an article about the fact that they are keeping their eyes open to other teams' camps and veteran players who could become available, names that people are familiar with, Daniel Nava, Clint Robinson. How likely is it that the Braves could try to snatch up one of those guys once they're released or DFA'd by their current club?
You know, I think that it's 50-50 right now. I think that there's certainly a desire to go there. You know, those two guys in particular, you look at Nava, he's a guy that could fit some needs. You look at a guy like Robinson, he's a guy that would be limited from a defensive perspective. You know, and obviously could you stick him at a corner outfield position? Sure. At the same time, do you want to carry that kind of guy, or do you think that you're going to get maybe the same kind of benefit from Bonifacio? Now, here's the big difference. Let me take a step back. With Robinson, you at least have some pop off that bench that you don't have, because you know, we talk about it being a 4-man bench, but it's essentially a 3-man bench when one of those guys is the backup catcher, and those 3 men being Jace Peterson, Chase Darnold, Emilio Bonifacio. Obviously, none of those guys are going to strike fear in pitchers. You can look up and down the lineup and say, hey, look, well, how many times are they going to have to pinch hit? Well, I'm going to tell you, at least once a night in the National League. Maybe not every situation that pinch hits. There may be you might get fortunate where there's a situation where you do just need to get a guy on base, or maybe just move somebody over, which, you know, you could obviously do with a sack bunt. But at the same time, there are going to be instances where you're trailing, where it'd be nice to put a guy up there that they could leave the yard. And I think that would be the attraction to getting a guy like Robinson. But hey, look, at this time of year, a lot of times you're essentially stuck with the guys that other teams don't want. You hope at the end of the day that maybe your depth in the bullpen, that your surplus matches up with another team, so where you're saying, hey, look, I don't really want to get rid of this arm, but at the same time, I don't have any room for Chaz Rowe. Let's throw him out there because he's out of options. And now all of a sudden you are able to maybe take advantage of another team that just doesn't have room for a bat like Robinson's.
And we will keep an eye on all of that here in the final week and a half, basically, of spring training leading up to opening day. And, of course, the first opening day in the new ballpark in Atlanta. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Braves edition. For Mark Bowman, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Tim McMaster here, along with Todd Zielecki, our MLB.com Phillies reporter, as spring training rolls along in Clearwater, but not for too much longer. We are getting closer and closer to opening day for the Phillies. We'll check in on a lot of the pitchers on this team and also check in on the roster spots that are still available and will be decided over the next basically 10 days between now and opening day. Todd, but let's start with the prospects who have been sent down now recently, J.P. Crawford, Nick Williams, Jorge Alfaro, all sent down to minor league camp. Who's going to be the first guy to come back to the Phillies?
That is a great, great question. I don't know if this is necessarily a reach, but I think J.P. Crawford could be the first guy if he gets off to a good start, and if Freddie Galvis kind of produces offensively the way he produced last season. I think there's going to be a lot of pushing from the fan base and maybe even from some people in the front office to give J.P. Crawford a shot. You know, as we've talked about in the past, Freddie is fantastic defensively. I mean, he was a Gold Glove finalist last year. We also had the worst on-base percentage in Major League Baseball last year, like the worst on-base percentage by a Phillies player in like 40, 50 years. He's got to be so much better than offensively. And then that's where J.P. Crawford can kind of put some pressure on him, because J.P. is an on-base machine. And last year he was the youngest player in AAA. when he got promoted in May. So they expect him to kind of step up, you know, and play a little bit better. So I think if he does what everybody expects him to do, I think it's going to be really hard just to keep him down there just for the sake of keeping him down there.
Is service time a factor at all in just giving him a couple months so that that clock doesn't start ticking?
Yeah, I think so. You know, kind of like a few years ago with Michael Franco. You know, Michael Franco got off to an unbelievable start, and he got called up basically like mid-May because, you know, that kind of gave him an extra year of eligibility of team control. So I think you could see that happen again. But it might take that long for the Phillies to know, be comfortable with calling him up anyway, you know. So it's not like if J.P. Crawford gets off to a great start the first couple weeks of the season and Freddie Galvis is struggling, they're gonna call off. It's going to take a couple months anyway. So I almost think by the time they figure out that he's ready, that the service time thing might not be an issue anymore.
Yeah, it's not like the Cubs and Chris Bryant a couple of years ago where he was ready to go out of spring training and they made it. It was quite obvious that they sent him down for a few weeks just for that reason. That would not be the case here with J.P. Crawford. All right, let's move on to some of these pitchers that are pitching well. Jeremy Hellickson now has been tabbed the opening day starter. No surprise there. Second straight season for Hellickson getting that nod, and it'll be against the Reds for the second straight season. You know what you're getting from him. How about some of these other guys? Jared Eichhoff looked really good on Sunday versus the Rays, six innings. He struck out 9, Todd, along the way, and I guess a big factor for Eichhoff has been the development of his changeup, right?
Yeah, that's been a focal point for him this spring and you know, a little bit this offseason, just trying to figure out how he can be better. He's got great curveball, a lot of swings and misses on the curveball last year. It was really his money pitch. His slider was pretty effective as well, but you know, he only threw his changeup about 5% of the time last year, and he wants to work that in a little bit more, improve the pitch, and then work it in a little bit more to kind of keep hitters a little bit more off balance. And last season at times, if he didn't have the curveball going, if he couldn't throw it for a strike, or say his slider wasn't working as well, he was kind of exposed a little bit, I guess you could say. It didn't happen often, but it did happen on occasion. So I think he's those few games where maybe that curveball isn't there, he wants to have another pitch that he can go to, and that's where the changeup comes in. And I think he feels like he's making some halfway decent progress with it. I don't know how much he's going to throw it during the season, percentage-wise, but I think if he can certainly jump it up from 5% to 10% or more, then you'll know that he's feeling pretty good about that pitch.
And it certainly puts one more thought in the batter's mind when they're digging in there against you as well, knowing that there's a possibility that pitch is coming. On the bullpen side of things, Adam Morgan heads into Wednesday's action with a 2.19 ERA in his 5 appearances. Has he put himself in a spot now, Todd, where he kind of has an inside track on one of those bullpen jobs?
You know, it's so hard to say with him. Like, you look at the numbers and you say, yes, like he should. He is clearly a favorite for a bullpen job. And I think he is. I think he is a favorite. You know, but there's a few guys in there. Joely Rodriguez is a favorite. He's another lefty in the bullpen. Luis Garcia, he's a right-hander in the bullpen. You know, all three of those guys, I think, have good shots because they're on the 40-man roster. Then you have non-roster guys like Sean Burnett and Cesar Ramos, who I think would really have to perform well. But what's interesting about that, about Adam Morgan, is he doesn't have great stuff. Like, he doesn't have overpowering stuff like Luis Garcia, you know, Joely Rodriguez, maybe even compared to him. So I think there's actually even a scenario where, just as I'm saying that he has as good a chance of anybody at making the bullpen, there's also a scenario that plays out where, you know, they add, say, 2 non-roster guys to the bench, or say they really like Sean Burnett or somebody, and they want to add him to the bullpen, that they end up, you know, DFAing Adam Morgan. So he's kind of in a really, really weird spot. They don't have a lot of maneuverability in terms of the 40-man roster. So you go, okay, who's the first guy to go? Entering camp, I would have said Luis Garcia, but now he's throwing a splitter, and that's kind of reinvented him a little bit, and the coaching staff seems really excited about it. The front office likes him a little bit, and he's got, he's got 95-mile-an-hour fastball. He had the best fastball on the team last year over the course of the season. So it's so hard to handicap Adam Morgan. It really could go either way.
When you look at his numbers, obviously the last 2 years, Todd, he's made 38 appearances in the major leagues, 36 of them starts. But are those days definitely behind him at this point? Is he a bullpen guy from here on out?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. They, we know that the Phillies have their starting rotation already set. and they go to AAA. You've got Jake Thompson, Zach Eflin, Mark Appel, you know, possibly Alec Asher, you know, Ben Lively, Nick Pivetta, you know, all those guys. They have other starters in that have kind of passed Adam Morgan by on the starting depth chart. So I think if Adam Morgan is going to make it in the big leagues, particularly with the Phillies, it's going to have to be as a relief pitcher, whether that be you know, a guy that can just go out there and throw one inning or kind of be the long man like he did yesterday. He threw three innings. So they're still trying to stretch him out. So I think that's definitely the way he's going to have to go if he wants to pitch in the big leagues for the Phillies this year.
You have a story on Phillies.com basically about how the roster is playing out now, and you get into it by talking about Howie Kendrick and his versatility. But the way it plays out is there's basically, it seems like, three roster spots that haven't been decided at this point. I'm not talking about the pitchers, but just position guys. There's a right. backup catcher. There's a race for that. And then there's some infield spots. Can you kind of handicap that? I guess catcher-wise, you have Andrew Knapp, and then you have Hannigan and Holiday, mm-hmm. who are the non-roster guys. Who's the favorite at this point for that spot?
You know, I think, oh boy, this is so tough, because I think if Andrew Knapp had been just kind of been, you know, hitting 260, 270 or whatever, had a decent spring, I think he'd be a stone cold lock. But the fact that he's kind of struggled a little bit this spring, it makes you wonder a little bit. But I know this much. They're not going to take, when you talk about those two bullpen jobs that we were just talking about, those two available bullpen jobs and the three bench jobs that are open, they absolutely are not going to take more than add two non-roster guys to the 40-man roster. So that's why I think Andrew Knapp has really, really helped out in this situation, even though he has not played particularly well this spring. So I guess I kind of give him a super, super slight edge over Ryan Hannigan. But what plays in Ryan Hannigan's favor is he's got an out clause in his contract for March 28th. So if Hannigan could lose Hannigan, you know, if they don't add him to the opening day roster. So, like I said, very, very slight edge to Andrew Knapp at this point.
And then the infield's a similar situation where you have some roster guys and then some veteran guys with familiar names that are also trying to get there. You have Yasmoel Valentin, and I think I butchered his first name, Brock Stassi. And then there's Chris Coughlin and Daniel Nava. So who has the edge there?
You know, I think, and this is where I think those two non-roster guys could come from. Brock Stassi has had an unbelievable spring. He's excellent defensively, which Pete McCannon likes at first base, because maybe he could be a late defensive replacement for Tommy Joseph. That's big when you got those one-run leads in the eighth, ninth inning. He can also play a little bit of outfield. He's a left-handed hitter with a little bit of pop, and he's really shown the ability to get on base this year, which is what you want out of a pinch hitter in the game. If you could just draw a walk and get on base, now you might have a rally situation on your hands. He's a non-roster guy, but I think he's certainly earned a shot on this team. So then you go for that last bullpen or that last bench job, probably an extra outfielder. Chris Coughlin, non-roster guy, he's got an out on his contract for this that comes up this Sunday. So you got to think that he's got a chance to make this team. And because the other guys that are on the 40-man roster, you have Yasmoel Valentin and utility infielder, more of a pure second baseman than a true utility infielder. And quite frankly, they still look at him as a prospect, so he could actually play every day in AAA at second base and get a little bit more developmental time. And then Tyler Goodell is still on the 40-man roster, but I think it would probably make more sense for him to play every single day somewhere in the minor leagues rather than kind of rot away on the bench like he did last season as a Rule 5 pick. So for that reason, I think those last two bench spots are more likely to be non-roster guys than that backup catcher spot or those two bullpen spots, which is why, you know, Andrew Knapp, I think, is still a slight favorite to be the backup catchers.
A lot of decisions still to be made for the Phillies between now and opening day. Certainly something we will keep our eye on. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Phillies edition. For Todd Zielecki, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.